This is Corolla Digital.
Hey, kiddies, Ace Man here, and that's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend, man.
Yeah, check us out at carcastshow.com and our social media. We're on facebook.com/carcastshow and Twitter @carcastshow.
And we'll see you there.
The Big Podcast with Shaq is huge this week as we're joined by the host of The Tonight Show, Jimmy Fallon.
Shaq, unfortunately, not as killer at the impressions as you are, Jimmy.
In fact, he's quite awful.
We're gonna see how many Shaq can rattle off here and how many you're able to guess.
I did not have relationships with this woman.
Well, I'm going to say it sounds like a Ronald Reagan impression. Ronald Reagan doing a Bill Clinton impression.
You're right.
Yes, you got it
right.
Jimmy, I like the pudding pop. When I come to the set, I want to get some pudding pops.
Hey.
That's right. Okay.
Fruity with the thing. Yes.
Yes, with the thing.
Hey, this is not bad. We can take this on the road.
Yes.
The Big Podcast with Shaq.
That's me. It's up right now at podcast1.com.
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. And welcome to CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, over there.
Hello.
And we have a legend in the house, Parnelli Jones.
Thank you.
Great to see you. Tilt the mic down and pull it right up to yourself there. It'll make it a lot easier. Parnelli has a documentary out called Godspeed. It's the story of P.J. Jones, his son, Paige. Yeah. Paige, am I making up PJ or did somebody call him that?
His older brother is PJ.
Oh, that's what it is. Paige Jones. Okay. Yeah. I watched it. It's very moving. It's very interesting. And it just chronicles.
I haven't seen it yet.
Well, Paige had an accident in a midget car or sprint car. I can't remember which one.
Sprint car.
And he had a traumatic brain trauma, and it's his story of his recovery, but it's really the story about Parnelli and the family and the community really just rallying around him.
Wow.
And how much you can do when the doctors say it is never going to work.
Yeah, that's the thing about it. You know, they told us that we're going to have 24-hour help for the rest of his life, and a handicapped bathroom and a table to stretch him and so on and so forth, something to transform, wheelchair, van of some sort to take him different places and stuff like that. And my wife Judy and I never accepted that. We just said, we're not going for that. We're going for, the home run, and we went after it. Fortunately, we had a friend who was, and Paige was pretty popular at the time, and he filmed all of his recovery.
Yeah.
So we had it all on film. And then, so obviously, when we got to the point where he finally came around in pretty good shape, somebody approached us and filmmaker and decided they thought we ought to make a film out of it. So that's kind of where we're at.
Well, Bruce Meyer was an executive producer on it. Jay Leno was an executive producer. Bruce reached out to me and said, watch this thing.
Okay.
I watched it. There's also another tragic part or component to this, which was a young lady who I don't know if he was dating or they were just friendly, was also a driver, up-and-coming driver, died just before this essentially happened on the track, right?
Yeah, that's right. She was a young, beautiful race gal, and she was a good racer as well. And she was driving a midget in San Diego and got upside down and her throttle stuck or something, went over the wall and killed her. And they were really close friends. And
yeah, so it starts with footage of the two of them, from the, mid-80s or something, kind of flirting and having fun, couple of carefree teens. And then it goes to, she's passed shortly thereafter, after we shot the video. And now Paige has had this horrific accident. So the story then chronicles the recovery and the
over how long? Do you know how long?
20 years?
20 years? Or
what is it, Parnelli?
It's been 21 years since his accident.
Okay.
And he went from, you know, you're going to have to eat applesauce for the rest of your life and someone will have to help you to the bathroom, to moving around and having a conversation. I mean, pretty, I don't know what percentage recovered it is. I'd leave it up to you to assign that. But by the end of the movie, seemed really functional.
Oh, yeah, he is. And he has his driver's license now and married and has a couple of kids, you know, 11-year-old and an 8-year-old. And he's doing really well.
Yeah, wow, thanks to you guys. I mean, that just had to be. I mean, like, on one hand, you're like, all right, this is our boy and we have to do everything we can do for him. On the other hand, how about a life sentence of helping someone out of bed every morning and shaving them and getting them to the bathroom?
Yeah.
And then all because it's a. Because it's traumatic, you know, it's one thing when there's spinal problems or limb problems, but this is a brain problem. So you can literally have this person you're trying to help punching you because their brain has been altered.
Yeah.
So you not only go through the part where you have to, you know, I just watched a whole Nick Bonacani, professional football player, his son, played college ball and was paralyzed from the neck down and all the problems.
In college,
yeah, from the neck down. And he had to get him and shave him and dress him. But his wits were about him. He just couldn't control his body. But he wasn't fighting with the person that was trying to help him.
Sure.
You know, you have that added miserable component of this. It's certainly at the beginning stages, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, Paige was really a tough case because – you know, he tore up about 150 T-shirts.
Yeah.
People would send him T-shirts, and he'd reach down and grab them with his teeth and just rip them off. I mean, he was so frustrated. But, you know, one thing about the brain injury, especially the Brain Injury Foundation, stuff like that, they usually kind of write you off after 2 years that this is as good as you're going to get. And, again, Judy and my wife and I never accepted that. And but anyway, we done everything we could do, and obviously it paid off. And I think it shows a light out there to other injuries. So we have all these soldiers coming back from Iraq and stuff like that, and give them a chance to have some, see something that don't give up. Because if you give up, it's all over.
It is Godspeed. PJ, that's probably where I got that from. PJ.com is where you can go for theatrical releases, VOD releases. You just go there and find out where the movie's playing. And it is, it's one of these things, it'll make you be thankful for the little things, except for you'll forget all about that 20 minutes later. It's sad the way we're wired. Like, I sit there and I go, oh, my God, what this family's been through, what Paige has been through, the humanity. And then I go, where's my dinner?
Yeah.
Why is it cold? I'm angry.
Yeah.
And then I march into the kitchen, forget all about it. But it's really, the story is the recovery, but it's really about the family and about the family really rallying around Paige. And not farming everything out and hiring a whole bunch of people. There were people involved, but I mean,
it sounds like there has to be.
there has to be people involved, but how you essentially make this a full-time job.
Yeah, it sounds like an amazing story. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it is. It's uplifting as many sad moments as it has in it. It's ultimately uplifting. How did Leno get involved with this?
Well, actually, through Bruce Myers, you know. Bruce, we went out to his place and showed him the film, and he got excited about it as well, and it all kind of came together. We had some financing come from Ford Motor Company and helped put, you know, the film, you know, the money behind the film. So we spent some money on the film, and it's, you know, done a nice production.
Have you been bitten by the documentary bug? I mean, you got a pretty interesting story. Have you thought about chronicling that story now that you've made one documentary? Is there any plans on other documentaries?
No.
You're out of the movie business?
Yeah. I did a couple of movies. In fact, I did a movie called Crash or the Checkered. Had Joe Don Baker, Susan Sarandon, a bunch of
walking
characters.
Tall.
It was a.
That's Joe Don Baker.
Yeah.
Well, before The Rock did it.
Before The Rock, there was Joe Don Baker.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I said I did a second film. It was gone in 30 seconds.
So won the Indy 500 in 1962, first driver to qualify over 150 miles an hour. Boy, 1962, with the tire technology, aerodynamics, and everything else, over 150 miles an hour is fast.
Oh, yeah.
With the lack of safety equipment in those cars. And when you look at those cars, I mean, in a way, it's like Formula One. They just look like little cigar tubes. They didn't have all the downforce and all the stuff that kept you on the track with those flat curves. I mean, you got to pinch yourself every once in a while, just the fact that you're here, right?
Well, also, the tires were very skinny. In fact,
right.
Like we always say that back then the drivers was fat, tires were skinny. Today it's the other way around. The tires are fat and the drivers are skinny.
The I'm reading here also that the turbine car broke down with three laps left. I remember the turbine car. I remember the idea. I mean, they made Chrysler made. Well, Leno's got a turbine car.
I think we saw one of the turbine race cars at one of the track days.
We did.
They had it jacked up, and they were kind of firing it up. They have to jack up the back of the turbine car, and it kind of fires up, and it makes a lot of noise, a lot of smoke.
What's the advantage of a turbine car, or what was the advantage in 1967?
That's a whole big story in itself.
I want to hear every second of it.
All right.
We're going to make another movie.
Well, you know what? I had driven for Andy Granatelli in a tire test.
There's a big guy with skinny tires.
Anyway, I ran faster than anybody had ever run this Novi. So from that time on, he was hounding me to come and drive for him. Of course, the Novi never had a very good track record.
That's the turbine?
No.
The Novi?
Novi was a 8-cylinder turbocharged, supercharged engine, but it wasn't very reliable. But anyway, make a long story short, he was hounding me to come and drive for him. And so when he built the turbine car in Santa Monica, he says, come over here. I want to show you something. So I came over and saw the car. It wasn't too far along. I mean, it was pretty far along, I guess. And I said, well, you know, I'm going to be testing at Phoenix in early January or February. And I said, bring it over there and I'll take a ride in it. So I did. And the more I drove it, the more impressed I got with it. So I finally had mixed emotions about whether I wanted to drive it or drive my own car.
Is the turbine from like a helicopter
It's a Pratt PT-6 helicopter engine.
It's always from a helicopter.
Yeah. God bless helicopters. Donating all their stuff.
It's not a jet propulsion type
thing. Right. Yeah.
So the turbine, and I want to hear the whole story. We got nothing but time. The turbine goes into a drive shaft, which goes into a differential, the same way an internal combustion engine would work.
Yeah, well, that's why it's a prop, like a prop job airplanes have.
Right.
The same turboprops.
The upside is what, and the downside is what on a turbine car?
Well, first of all, it has a tremendous amount of torque, but when you on its straightaways, when you back off, it's still accelerating.
Uh-huh.
Is that a plus or a negative? I don't know. I can't tell.
You have to rely on the brakes a lot.
Yeah.
And but anyway, it worked well in Indianapolis. But what happened in the 7 years that I run in Indianapolis, I was always in the first two rows. And I qualified sixth to the turbine. And, of course, everybody thought I was sandbagging because this thing would accelerate real hard across the short straightaways and off the turn. But about halfway down the long straightaways, it would quit accelerating.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody thought, and the guys like Mario and Foyt and Unser and all of them, they would drive by me, and they thought that I was backing off.
Thought you were lifting.
So they, yeah, they said, he's sandbagging. So
were they saying that because they were they protesting at the time? I mean, or were there protests?
They weren't liking it too much.
Right.
Of course, I was needling them a little bit as well.
Right. So there's nothing in the rule book that says no turbines. On the other hand, the rule book was written before turbines were invented.
So you kind of show up, and then the rules are written after the fact, yeah. Right? It's like...
Right. So
anyway... So I was having a lot of fun with it because I kept joking. They kept saying I was sandbagging. People were sending me sandbags in the mail. Stuff. I was having a lot of fun with
shipping.
It.
It's a
lot,
not back then.
The joke's on them.
But I knew race day because we were carrying 75 gallons of fuel then. And I knew race day that when my other guys put on 75 gallons of fuel, they probably wouldn't have enough to get back by me. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, I could run, you know, the full load of fuel just about as well as I could empty.
Well, what is and how many laps can you get with 75 gallons of fuel in a turbine versus 75 gallons of fuel and a turbocharged Offenhauser or something?
I don't remember what the exact was. Probably somewhere around 40, 50 laps.
Was it better or worse than a conventional motor?
Well, it had a tremendous amount of torque, and then on race day, what happened? These guys couldn't pass me back by me. Mm-hmm. And of course, nobody gave the car any credit how well it handled as well. It was a four-wheel drive car as well.
Oh, it was.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So when I started second row outside and when they dropped the green flag, I just stuck it around the outside and drove by everybody but Mario.
Why the decision for four-wheel drive? That seems like exotic on top of exotic.
Yeah.
Well, 2 years later, they outlawed the turbines.
Well, of course, after
they didn't outlaw them. They restricted them to the point that they weren't going to be competitive.
Right.
And then, obviously, the four-wheel drive, they outlawed that as well.
But
the decision to go with the four-wheel drive, is it just because of the amount of torque that you were making, you wanted the added traction, or was there?
Well, that's the way they designed the car.
Yeah,
you know, and so anyway, and so across the short chute, I came right up behind Mario, perfect timing coming off of two. I went underneath, and he gave me the one lap sign as I went by.
The one lap sign.
That is, boy.
That's the most polite way I've ever heard that before.
Yeah, you get the white flag with one finger from the Italian guy.
Yeah.
I can't imagine something in the, you know, 1967, but probably being built and developed in like 65, 66, a more exotic configuration for an Indy car than all-wheel drive turbine.
Yeah.
Well, they actually, in the car, the engine was on the side.
Yeah, we were looking at
pictures
of it.
Yeah, and, you know, and that was a little bit of a concern because if the engine come apart and the shrapnel could have come through the tub, so we did have a safety barrier there, but
right.
But who knows?
Shield.
Yeah, right. Who knows?
I'll tell you, So, again, I'm trying to figure out, and maybe you don't know, but would you get better fuel mileage with the turbine car?
Probably running, yeah. The only thing is running on the yellow or on a slower pace, you use the same amount of fuel as you do with it.
Right, but if you can keep the air going through the thing,
yeah.
You can. And it's just running on kerosene, right?
Well, actually, you can run on a lot of different things. In fact, in the Andy came back in 68, they had four turbines there.
Really?
And Joe Leonard was our guy, and we were working on his car, and Andy, at the last minute, made a deal with Standard Oil to run gasoline instead of the jet fuel.
Wow.
And we were leading the race with about 12 or 16 laps, something like that, to go. And on the yellow flag, and when they dropped the green, it wouldn't take off.
Oh.
The gasoline didn't have enough lubricant in it. Froze up the fuel pump drive.
I'll tell you. Go ahead.
Interesting.
Cost the race for the turbine the second year in a row.
Yeah. Tell you about lubricant. Castrol. That's right. Yeah. Magnatec. GTX. Magnatec. Intelligent molecules. They cling to the critical engine parts. No warm-up necessary. 75% of engine wear occurs in the first 20 minutes of driving. Engines. They're just not – it takes like 20 minutes to get them up to operating temperature. You go to the store and back, buy a six-pack, you ain't up to operating temperature. You are causing wear on your engine. Castrol clings to the important bits and pieces and keeps them all lubed up real nice. Try a new Castrol GTX Magnatec today. Available at major retailers and quick lube centers. Castrol GTX Magnatec. Yeah, Andy Granatelli went on to create Tune-Up Masters. Did you know that?
I did not.
I don't know if they had
I know the Granatelli family.
I don't know if they had Tune-Up Masters in Phoenix.
Yeah.
But they had them out here all over the place. Tune-Up Masters was like 7-Elevens. They're like on every corner. And Andy would do all the commercials. And Andy,
I don't remember them.
Andy may have put on 150 pounds from the time he was driving to the time.
The camera adds.
The camera does add a little weight, but not that much. And Andy would come out in an overcoat, and he'd go, "Hi, I'm Andy Granatelli." And there'd be footage of him, you know, running in or winning or doing an Indy 500 winner. And I'm like, how did you fit into that? I was nine. You know, I'd watch these things when I was 9 years old. Like, how'd you fit into that car?
This is what troubled you as a nine-year-old.
Well, of course, then later, you know, he purchased STP.
STP, right.
And went crazy with that. I mean, I can remember us wearing monkey suits with STP all over them.
Nobody did a better job of marketing. We're going to watch a commercial. Hold on. Nobody did a better job. Hold on a second. Of marketing STP than Andy or STP, because every kid I knew had an STP sticker. There's somehow it was just ubiquitous. It was like everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We can turn up the volume. Let's hear Andy from 1984. Always have a little. It's always a little volume issue. And by the way. Yeah. Chris, you can go back to 1978, probably. Well, but
why do I see this image and immediately think of, is it Jackie Mason, like Caddyshack 2? Or...
Andy was like, this overcoat's not making me look fat enough. Perhaps I lift the belt up just
higher,
up to
just
my...
like right under the boob.
Right under the boob and then suck it in tight. That'll give it the full effect.
Andy used to say he had the perfect body, the rest of us were screwed up.
Andy, last I checked, was living around Santa Barbara somewhere, and I think
we've lost him.
Recently.
Oh,
then.
Wow.
He was around.
Yeah, about a year ago.
He was living in Santa Barbara and showing up at the car shows and doing the events ringing the bell. I mean, literally a year ago, up until a year ago, right? I mean, he was an older guy and still going strong.
He was 90 years old.
He had a 89. Well, there's a documentary, the Andy Granatelli story.
Yeah.
And Tune-Up Masters, it's insane because Tune-Up Masters is like blockbuster video rental of the last 10 years. It's like you do points, you do rotors, you adjust the points, you do the rotors, you do the spark. Now every car, forget it.
There's
no ignition.
All electronic.
It's all electronic now. And his whole deal was, we do the cap, we do the rotors, we do the points, do the whole nine yards. But nobody, it's so weird. When's the last time somebody took their car in for a tune-up?
Yeah, that's a good point. I just did it on the Alpha, cap, rotor, whole deal, yeah.
From 1977.
Let's face it, in a lot of ways, the electronics and aerodynamics and stuff has really screwed up racing. Because it's all into the engineers now.
Yeah.
And they can program the cars, too. They don't even have to ask the driver when he comes in what the car's doing.
Yeah, mechanics are on laptops now, not really under the hood.
Yeah,
they're still.
Watching some of the German, production, whatever, BMW, Audi, whatever. Everyone's driving with a butterfly steering wheel that has all the shifts, all the things, all the rev matches, all the everything on it.
Sort of Knight Rider, by the way.
Yeah, kind of Knight Rider, and you're kind of thinking to yourself. You're not having to blip the throttle and shift, pull the thing, drop it into the thing and rev match and all that stuff. You're just, the computer's just kind of, when these guys downshift, it's like, flip, flip, rev match, rev match, rev match, and then turn. Okay, now you still got to be able to drive, But it has taken an element of that seat of your pants out of it, and especially when Parnelli was driving. I mean, oh, my God.
Well, he just came here, and he brought a car with him, and he's like, driving stick in L.A. sucks. He goes, cars should have paddle shifters now. And I was telling him, it's very rare that people come into the show and say, I want paddle shifters and not the stick. It's usually the other way around, but you're right, sitting in traffic.
Well, we all get spoiled.
Yeah.
Do we have Andy Granatelli?
I'm sure you can take care of it, Rob. Thank you. Hi, I'm Andy Granatelli. I run tune-up messes. We test and tune your car on a precision highway dynamometer. Under power, the dynamometer creates highway driving conditions, and we use space-age electronics to help make your car's engine run its very best. All for one guaranteed low price, only $49.95 for all cars, domestic and imports. And you can trust tune-up messes to do a great job, or my name isn't Andy Granatelli.
That's great. He's like a fat Inspector Gadget.
And he's like, you know what else would make me look fatter? Let's get the camera down on the ground so it looks like my head's the side of a pumpkin. Like, Andy, this whole plant, it's like, they're probably like, Andy, we're filming. Hold on. Let me eat something and drink a quart of salt water so I'm bloated. Andy's not doing himself any favors.
No, to 90, though. He lived to 90. I'm not going to live to 90, and run all the time.
No. Nope.
I'm never going to make it. I'm glad I'm going to
It was a simpler 45. Time. By the way, I would have went in and said, look, Andy, Earl Scheib can paint my car for $29.99. You want me to pay $49 for a tune-up?
For a
tune-up? I got the car painted for under $30.
Got the tires painted, the exhaust pipe painted. They'll
paint
do everything.
Windshield. Seagull shit, they'll paint it all.
Right over that stuff. They won't even wash it.
So, Parnelli, how do you get to Indy? What is your story? Where does the name Parnelli come from? Where do you grow up? What's your path? How does this happen?
Well, I grew up in the Torrance area.
Oh, so yeah, you're out here.
Local, so. Anyway, I kind of was into horses, and so as a young kid, I was hanging around a stable, and I used to break horses to ride, and I finally was able to buy my own horse. When I turned 16, I sold my horse and bought a hot rod. And that started me on the path of my racing career. But anyway, I wasn't very good at to begin with, and after wrecking my car week after week, they were calling me the crazy man, and I had all this desire, no talent. So anyway, finally somebody in the stands realized that there was something there. And she told her husband, she said, you ought to put Parnelli in your car. He said, are you out of your mind? So anyway, he just said, I blew the engine up in my car, and he said he'd build an engine for my car. And of course, his engine run better than mine. And he said, just slow down, quit trying to win the race in the first corner. And I listened to him and stuff like that, and all of a sudden, click, and I started winning races.
Where's Parnelli come from, the name?
Well, my middle name is Parnell.
Ah.
And my mother named me after a judge, and his name was Rufus Parnell. So my mother named me Rufus Parnell Jones. So anyway, and later, when I started racing, I was only 17 years old, so I had to have a phony identification. Because the kids in Gardena, where I was racing, would have known that I wasn't 21 years old.
Right.
So my buddy was very artistic and lettered my car and did like that.
He was a criminal.
That's what I picked up on.
So he did your car that way. Didn't make you a fake ID.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So he made me a phony ID as well.
Oh, no, he was artistic.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, that worked, you know, and people, so he... Because there was a girl in school, her name was Nellie, and he used to rib me about her all the time.
Parnelli, yeah.
And Parnelli, and also when he made my phony identification, he put Parnelli instead of the Rufus.
I love that he did it as a joke, and here you are with the name still. He's like, oh, this is the girl you had a crush on.
Every good nickname works out that way. It starts off as nothing, and it turns out to be, you know, well, in racing for sure, a household name. Indy, NASCAR, Baja, right?
Yeah.
You had the Ole Bronco, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love that Ole Bronco. Yeah, that was, I tell you, sweet. There is sweet spots of cars, You know what I mean? Like, I feel that way about F1. You know, 1976, that was a sweet spot. I didn't like 1956. I didn't like 1996. Yeah. 76 was a sweet spot. And for me, that Ole Bronco, that from 1971 or whatever it was, that's a sweet
That thing's
kind of
cool.
Mobile.
I don't know how you sort of developed like the big wing that sits on the roof. You're like, well, a wing I get. Like, I understand the.
Well, I could tell you all about
it. And then you're like, why in the middle of the roof?
I want to hear all about it, too. Also, it was stolen, was it not?
Oh, in the movie, it was gone in 60 seconds.
Oh, it was in the movie it was stolen.
You were confused by news and movies.
Life, art, they commingle in my brain.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But, you know, it was a pretty famous car because it's been all over the United States. It's actually now in the museum at Indianapolis on loan. Mm-hmm. I still own it.
Right.
Okay.
And, but anyway, with the when I built the car, I won the 500 in another Bronco. And when I did that, I knew exactly what I wanted in a race car. For
the Baja
1000.
The Baja 500, not the Indianapolis.
No,
yeah. If you'd done
in
that
Bronco,
that would be historic.
So you had to have a cover over the top. So I figured if you have the cover, you might as well make a wing foil.
So that's it. You know, wanted shade. That's the strategy?
Sure, because we had our Indy team there, and they good fabricators and stuff like that.
And?
So in the wing, it had a couple of lights that pop out the back. And then the rear aileron in the back.
Boy, that
was... adjust it from the inside.
You could adjust the aileron from inside the car.
That way, when it came over, you didn't land on a nose.
Right.
Come over and it'd land somewhat.
Oh, they provided shade.
Boy, I mean, whether it's the Indianapolis 500 or the Baja 1000, that's back when doing it was doing it. No air scrubbers and fresh air.
Yeah, carbon fiber pieces. And
just the cockpit being... dust-free, and you sucking off a helmet that's got clean air in it. That's put a bandana around your face and get going.
In 71, we won the Baja 1000, and it's 946 miles and did it 14 hours and 59 minutes.
Absolutely unbelievable, especially when you picture that terrain. Oh, I was just about – we had a call from Dubai, and a guy just fell off. But anyway,
somebody called him.
Carlos. Carlos, 24, San Francisco.
How you guys doing?
Good, Carlos. What's going on?
Good. Well, I called in last week, and you told me that I could come by anytime you go race. So I got to thinking and researched the Sims Raceway Mechanics Training Program. And they specialize in race cars and how to work everything on them from suspension to engine management and everything else that goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, I just wanted to know if you knew anything about it and whether or not it'd be a good idea to, you know, go to it.
Here's what I think about anything, because whether it's becoming a race mechanic or getting into radio or wanting to do a podcast or whatever, go do it. That's the whole thing. There's not a right way and a wrong way.
No.
There are things...
tell me, do the reps. Do the reps.
Do the reps. Thing. I'll tell you this. I wanted to get into radio when I was 17 or 18. I roamed the halls of the junior college at Valley College in Van Nuys. At some point, I found myself walking up and down the halls of Pasadena City College asking, like, do you have a radio station? Like, how does it work? I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And the answer is usually buzz off. Like, or some form of discouragement. Like I said, do you have a radio station? Yeah, we do. You have to take voice and diction. Then you have to take radio 101 and 102 and 103. And then in five semesters, you can do midnights on Tuesday nights for 10 minutes. No talking.
What do you do?
Just speech voice. And so I then walked back to my crappy truck and went, well, this is going to be hard. But was it a waste of time? I don't know. If it was a waste of time, it was all part of the progression. Yeah. It was all part of the process. Yeah, it didn't mean, oh, well, you should have never went to Valley College and took that stupid voice and diction class you can't remember anything of. Everyone wants to sit around and weigh everything in advance. Is this going to work? Is it not going to work? Is it worth my time? Should I spend my money? Go do it.
You just start
doing
it.
No one will be able to figure
that
out.
And then you'll know right away if it's a waste of your time or not, if it's...
Nothing,
you're already doing it.
Nothing is a waste of your time if you're engaged in what you are pursuing, even if there's nothing that directly comes off of that. It's not like, well, I went to take this class, and then Andy Granatelli Jr. tapped me on the shoulder and said he wanted me to be the lead mechanic for his NASCAR team. That's never going to happen, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
You're going to continue anyway. So if there's a program, if there's a school, if it – I mean, now, I'm not talking about shysters that are – you know, there are plenty of guys in this business who go, hey, I'll take your headshots, give me $200, I'll get them to the right people, you never see them again, you're out the money. I'm not talking about being fleeced. I'm talking about a legitimate program and you taking it.
Yeah.
If that's legitimate, then take it.
All right. Sounds good, yeah. It's just the toughest part is I'd have to quit my job and do it, but I mean, it sounds great, and it's something that I want to do. I love
That's the beauty about being. That's the beauty of being 24. And look, everybody, it's a kind of a thing in life, kind of a Rubik's Cube, which is like, well, in order to do this, I got to do that. And it's like, yeah, of course, you can't have your full-time job, do everything exactly, you know. Hey, I like to watch football all Sunday with the boys. Yeah, well, you're going to have to give that up so that you can study for whatever you're working toward, you know.
Yeah,
but I like to, of course, there's sacrifice. It's called sacrifice. The good news is it's for something that you'd like to do.
Yeah.
The people do this all the time where they go, I work full-time, so how am I going to get from point A to point B? It's like, hey, you have nights. You have to work nights. You have to work weekends.
Yeah.
As you hear my voice, I'm in either Detroit or Chicago because
That's true.
Work every weekend. You see?
Yes.
So if you'd like to get somewhere in life, you will work some nights and some weekends. A lot of them. As a matter of fact, I've talked to every successful person I talk to and I go, you ever work nights and weekends? And they go, all the time. And I go, where would you be if you just said no work on weekends? Just absolutely not. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that's my Sabbath. I don't do anything. They're like, nowhere. I'd be nowhere.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Parnelli, you get that,
I would
right?
be bored.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Racing is the same thing. You know, it's that desire, will, you know, the commitment that you make, you know, and just don't give up. You know, you just got to keep going after it.
Everything that's hard to do or that you want to do, again, if you want to flip burgers at McDonald's, there's no line and there's no barrier to entry. Everyone can do that. If you'd like to start in the starting grid of 36 cars, how many cars start?
33.
Wow, way off. 33 cars. If you'd like to be one of the 33 that are out on that track at that incredible spectacle, you better work because there's a whole bunch of dudes who want to be there. There ain't a whole bunch of dudes who want to flip burgers. There's a whole bunch of dudes who want to be in that starting grid.
Yes.
That's why you should do it. Let me give a little plug for us, by the way, or me. Speaking of working weekends, now, wait a minute. When does this air, Maxipata? Just on Friday?
Correct.
Oh, okay, good. I've got too many podcasts going. Tonight, then, as you listen to this on a Friday, I'm going to be Royal Oak, Michigan, Holiday Market. And that will be at, I think it's going to be at 7:30 because that show starts at 9 now. So we found out. Did you not hear about that part, Chris?
Oh, I think I did, actually.
Okay, good. You know what I like about everyone here? They're lazy, but they're honest.
No, what do you mean? I put tonight, and then you just go to the website. I didn't tell you the time.
It says 6:30.
No, he's talking about the Mangria bottle signing.
Oh, that
has changed.
That got moved. Yeah, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, now we're
and
back.
I'm completely wrong, and probably very lazy.
Look, just punch yourself once. Don't beat yourself up. Just one punch.
I assume it's been confirmed by now. I've been waiting for the confirmation.
We've been figuring it
all right,
out.
Wait, so okay, start over. Tonight you're doing Royal Oak Music Theater, but before that you're doing Mangria bottle signing.
That's right. There's
Holiday
some
Market.
Tickets available for tonight. Chicago sold out, and Binnie's. You can come now if it's sold out. You can still come see me tomorrow night, October 24th at 6:30 before I do that show. So that's work on top of work on top of weekends.
Yeah, I'll call you. check in with you.
Thank you. Winning the Racing Life of Paul Newman. It is going to be on Velocity November 20th at 9 o'clock. I cut a promo for that, which was fun. So
right,
that'll
good.
Be on Velocity. Good. And out on DVD November 10th. So go watch that. Parnelli, we got to get you a copy of that.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
You will enjoy that. It is like Godspeed, another documentary, completely different, but all the same, just human beings having an experience.
Again, another just great story about a great man, regardless of the racing, whether you like the racing or not.
And it has the charitable component to it, that Newman raising over $400 million.
With his dressing.
Yeah,
popcorn dressing. This guy's making kitty litter now. I mean, he's making stuff from the grave. It never stopped. But Parnelli's story,
more successful than all of us.
And
he's Paige's not even a lot.
Stories about raising funds, awareness, foundations, the same thing. So it's all philanthropic. As a matter of fact, I swear, if you download the thing, if you do the VOD or something, it's probably a write-off. You'd have to be pretty cheap to write off the $3.99, but it's probably a write-off.
Every time I'm sitting on my ass watching car shows on DVD, write-off.
That's right.
If I order food while I'm watching it, that food is paid for, you see.
Your fundamental problem with a write-off is first you need income.
That's true. That's true.
We are going to be live at SEMA. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
And our good friend Pete Brock is going to be there.
Yeah.
And that is Thursday, November 5th, Motivicity booth at 1 o'clock, and then autographs over at Tokiko booth. Shocks. I think Pete's going to be there. We'll have the BRE 510.
The 510 is going to be there in the Tokiko booth, I believe. So when we do the autograph session, you'll see the car there, and we'll talk with Pete Brock. We'll talk with the guys from SEMA. We'll talk with the guys from Motivicity.
Parnelli came out here with a guy who did the color design for, was it? Sharp.
Yeah. Jimmy that works for me.
He laid that out for...
Yeah, he did. Well, he did some work for them for a couple of years, I guess.
I should ask Jimmy.
He was telling me the story that they were doing the conversion from Datsun to Nissan, and nobody knew the Nissan brand, and he was saying they wanted to be sort of, you know, as you know, they wanted to look American, and they wanted to sort of present. I don't know, the Nissan name says American to me, but
well, the thing that's funny to me is I always say is, as a guy who loves the old Japanese race cars, the biggest players for me were Sharp, Newman Sharp, their team. Then there was BRE, Brock's team.
Yeah.
And then there was Electromotive, Diefendorf's team. And there's one thing they had in common besides driving 510s or Z cars.
Colors.
All red, white, and blue.
They liked colors.
The three major teams' color scheme was red, white, and blue. Now, how could that be a coincidence?
That's got to come from Nissan.
Somebody's got to tell them, look, we bombed Pearl Harbor. It wasn't that long ago. And granddad may have some thoughts about that. So let's paint the cars red, white, and blue so we can sell a few on Monday after we do some winning on Sunday. They're all little different schemes and different shades, but if you say, what color is the Electromotive car? It is red, white, and blue. And it's great because it's a great country, a great flag, and a great livery.
Yes.
As well. The movie, the documentary, Godspeed, the story of Paige Jones, again, moving, uplifting, heartbreaking at times, but really worth watching. And a really nice piece. And it's the kind of thing where I know no father wants this to happen to them. But what you guys did is really inspiring in real life. And also the movie's inspiring.
Yeah, well, it's over now. But, I mean, when you go through that for as long a period of time as we did, it becomes part of your life.
Is it hard to watch for you?
It's hard to watch, certain parts of it is, But it's, we've got a good ending. That's the thing.
You know how it ends.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but...
That's what counts. And, and I think, what the film will do for other people as well is going to be worth it all.
You visit GodspeedPJ.com for all the information. Also, Castrol. Oh, if the great Andy Granatelli was here today. He'd love to hear me talking about Castrol.
I love it.
GTX, Magnatech, intelligent molecules, clings to the critical engine parts. You know it. You guys send me your tweets. People send me tweets of them pouring it into their car.
Castrol, yeah.
I see someone drinking some of that stuff.
Don't do that.
Don't?
I don't think that's
well, it'd be funny if you cleaned it out real good and put some Gatorade in there. And that'd
some,
be funny,
some mangria,
right?
You could get some mangria.
Ooh, makes a nice, the quart size, a nice flask.
Yeah.
Never thought about that.
Spike my Castrol.
Mm-hmm. Short trips, engine wear. Bah to that, GTX Magtech. But seriously, when you guys tweet me your pictures of dumping it in your Fords and your everything else's, I really, really enjoy it. I don't know why. I like the big gallon size. Anyway, try new Castrol GTX Magtech today. Available at all major retailers, quick lube centers. Magtech, Castrol. All right, Take a Knee, my show that I do on the side. Jay Duplass, who's a filmmaker of the Duplass Brothers. You can enjoy that. You can support this show. Go to carcastshow.com, bookmark us, and hit the Amazon banner. And tell a friend, because after all, that's what we rely on. So, until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Parnelli Jones and Matt the Moderator, DeAndrea, Chris Max Pata saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey, it's Chris Loxamana reminding you to check out the show Resume. This week, comedian Joe Coy makes his return, and he brought his business partner Anton Guerrero and UFC fighter John Cruz Tuck. We talk about the importance of detail in opening your own restaurant, and John teaches me how to take a punch. And also, Joe shares the scariest ghost story I've ever heard.
She pops up to the rumbling of the sound like, what the fuck? And we both look at the wall. As we both look at the wall, the fucking door opens. And it makes the same sound you hear. It makes the same sound you hear in a horror flick.
One more time.
And then she goes, what the fuck was that? And I just looked at her and go, you don't even want to know what the fuck I just went through tonight.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or check it out at chrisloxamana.com. The podcast is called Resume, and it's right here on Corolla Digital.
This is Corolla Digital.
Stay tuned for the latest AP news headlines from Podcast One right after this.
AP Update. I'm Carlotta Bradley. Officials in Southeast Texas are bracing for heavy rain overnight as the remnants of the storm Patricia combine with a powerful system that's been rumbling across the state. Houston Mayor Anise Parker says police resources and other assets are in place.
We also have fire assets pre-positioned, and we have, of course, all of our first responders on notice that they may have to deploy.
Galveston County Judge Mark Henry says the National Weather Service has said conditions in his area will go downhill overnight.
Higher than normal tides by quite a bit. We're going to expect heavy rainfall up to as much as 12 or 13 inches within a couple of hours, and we're going to expect gale force winds.
Brian Kyle with the National Weather Service says a weak tornado touched down south of Houston, causing some roof damage to a building. AP Update, I'm Carlotta Bradley.